The following program is brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice, and all economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal. Any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any person for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax, and penalties may be imposed on such persons, and each listener should seek advice from their own tax advisor, legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice. Nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show. Welcome, everyone. Your Money with David Hay is going to be a good one today. Mary Beth Franklin, the senior editor, the former editor of Kiplinger Magazine, and now the contributing editor of Investment News, will be joining me live. Can't wait for that. But before we get to Mary Beth, let's do a little news of the week brought to you by Lemonade Day. Go sign up your kid, grandkid, your neighbor, kid from church, whatever, bloomington.lemonadeday.org. Build a stand, spark a dream. They make some money, and then they can make a difference. Lemonade Day is coming up May 21st. It's hot news this week. 7 years from the bear market lows, the bottom of the S&P 500, 677 is the way it closed on March 9th of 2009. At the end of a 17-month bear market, in which the stock market fell actually 57%, according to the American Association of Individual Investors, a weekly survey, and this is what I remember, a weekly survey of stock investors indicated that 70% of them at that moment in time were bearish as of March 4th, 2009, the highest bearish measurement ever recorded by this study. I remember the president of Vanguard even coming out and saying, hey, the market could go down 10% even today. On this show, I remember talking about a 12-year low, and that the last time it hit a 12-year low, it took off from there. You know, there's also been a lot of talk recently about the unemployment rate kind of hanging in there, and participation in the workforce or labor force ticked up a little bit, even though wages have been flat from by the numbers. This is how sensitive these numbers are. If the U.S. had 5 unemployed people for every 100 people out there working, that means we have a 5% unemployment rate, 5 divided by 100. Now, if there's one additional unemployed person that just simply gave up looking for work, they're no longer counted in the unemployment calculation. So if we, by counting that person, the new math would be 6 divided by 101, or actually a 5.9% unemployment rate. That's how sensitive these things are. Not counting on it, and this kind of dovetails in today's show, just 35% of active workers today are very or somewhat confident in the future of Social Security. They'll be there for them, at least equal to the retirement benefits that are being divvied out today to the current retirees. That comes from the Employee Benefit Research Institute. I saw an article one time in USA Today that said people in their 40s, more of them, believe in aliens than they believe that Social Security will be there for them. And then finally, from the Ed Slot Group, the first baby boomers are turning 70 and a half this year, and they're going to be droves and droves right behind them. And they're going to be required to take minimum distributions from their retirement accounts. And unfortunately, that likely means a lot of people are going to screw this thing up and trigger what could be up to a 50% penalty. The members of the Ed Slot Group actually created and compiled a resource for us to help you go through this complex planning process. It's called the Definitive Guide to Required Minimum Distributions for Baby Boomers. It's a 40-page-plus guide, contains expertise, analysis, examples, charts, key points, all of it, frequently asked questions. We're going to give it out free. If you'd like a copy, email us at cfci.us. We'll send you a copy. The Definitive Guide to Required Minimum Distributions for Baby Boomers. It's a 40-page guide, contains all kinds of goodies. Again, free. You just have to email us at cfci.us, and we'll get you a copy. Hey, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll be joined live by Mary Beth Franklin. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Thanks for hanging out with us. Good show today. I promise you that. So good. It will be played again next week while I'm on spring break in a hopefully beautiful Southern California with my family. So hoping that our weather is better than Mary Beth's weather was when she was out in California this past week. Contributing editor of Investment News, formerly with Kiplinger Personal Finance. She's a national speaker on retirement issues, a focus in the area of Social Security and Medicare. She writes about it all the time. And Mary Beth, welcome to the show, first of all, and thank you so much for once again being on the big show here in Southern Indiana.
Well, Well, David, it's always a pleasure. I always appreciate the invitation.
First of all, I want to tell you, my dad heard you were on. He's, of course, a big fan, wanted me to tell you
Aaron,
hello.
Yes.
So he's listening. He's listening as well. But you were on the show last September, 6 months ago. We were talking about all the many different Social Security claiming strategies, how to take advantage of them. We had really no idea that they were going to come to an abrupt end in December. It happened pretty suddenly with part of the spending bill that was passed by Congress, signed by the president back in December. Just slammed the door on some of the most popular claiming strategies. So there's been a lot of confusion out there, Mary Beth, on these new rules. You wrote an article just recently, mass confusion over the new Social Security rules. So some things have changed, even in just a short period of time.
Yes, they have. It came with no warning, which I think is the biggest shock. And the fact that so many people who had become aware of these valuable claiming strategies, which we'll just detail in a moment, had planned to use them as part of their secure retirement income plan. And suddenly people are finding out, depending on your birth date, you can or you cannot still use these valuable claiming strategies. The first one's called file and suspend. And what that means is if you are at least 66, which is the full retirement age, you could file for your benefits and then immediately suspend them, which means you don't collect the benefit, but it triggers a benefit for an eligible family member, such as a spouse or maybe a minor dependent child. That valuable strategy is going away after April 29th. So there's a very short window for people who are 66 or older who have not yet claimed Social Security. They may want to talk to you about, does it make sense to file and suspend?
Mm-hmm, for sure. Well, those were some outstanding claiming strategies, and you're right. We had built some plans on this, thinking that if you were maybe mid to late 50s or older, you'd probably would be grandfathered, or we'd have some time, and we didn't have it for sure. So it is what it is. Now, when you talk about the people that could still take advantage of this, I was reading through the article, The Mass Confusion Over New Social Security Rules, and I have had people that we've talked to about this call me, email me, and say, hey, I need to do something. I've heard I need to do something. For people that are 66 before that magical date of April 28th or 29th, if they have a spouse that was at least 62 before the end of the year, those are the people that can still do this. Isn't that right?
Well, let's back up and explain that second strategy. The first one we talked about was filing and suspending, where you basically file for benefits but don't collect them so you can trigger a benefit for a spouse. The second valuable claiming strategy is the ability of when you turn 66, if you don't claim before then, and you're married, or in some cases you're divorced, you can claim only your spousal benefits, meaning half of what your husband or wife is collecting, and let your own benefit grow by 8% a year up until age 70, when you would switch to your own larger benefit. This is also extremely valuable, and there's a longer window of opportunity here. Anyone who was 62 or older by the end of 2015, and in a weird little rule, that includes anyone who turned 62 on January 1st.
Mm-hmm.
They are considered 62 in 2015. Anyone who was 62 or older by the end of 2015, when they turn 66, can still claim spousal benefits only and allow their own benefits to keep growing. So we essentially have a four-year window here of people who can take advantage of this other strategy. Now, I want to comment on something you just said. There is mass confusion, as my article said, particularly among people at the Social Security Administration who are giving out information.
Yeah.
They think that both spouses have to be 66 in order for one to file and suspend and the other to collect spousal benefits. That isn't true. As long as one spouse is at least 66, and files and suspends by the April 29th deadline, that turns on a spousal benefit. Let's say your spouse is 2 years younger. She's not going to hit 62 for two more years. That's okay. 2 years from now, when she turns 66, she can claim only spousal benefits for 4 years and then switch to her own larger benefit at 70. There is this misconception that both of them have to be 66 at the same time to utilize these, and that's not true.
I had a gentleman call me this morning from Florida, and he's been a client a long time. His wife is actually 66. She'll be 67 in September. He turned 62 on March 1st, and we had to have a heart-to-heart discussion about how he missed it. And that's what I wanted to, and I told him I was going to be talking to you about this. So I said to him, you were born basically 2 months late. But
tell your friends that Mary Beth missed it by a year. I turned 61 in December, and when this came out, I said to my husband, I said, this is personal.
I'm not so sure. It's kind of like basketball. Is it worse to lose by 2 points or get blown out by a full 20? So I'm not sure about that. Let's just talk about some of the basics, because the basics haven't changed. You can still file at 62. Your full retirement age for most people is 66 or 67. The delay credits are still there. But for people that were married for more than 10 years, divorced, or widows, Mary Beth, has it changed for those folks as well?
Well, I'll start with the widows. No, the fact that a widow or widower who has a retirement benefit on their own earnings record and they are a surviving spouse, they are actually entitled to both their own retirement benefit and a survivor benefit. They can't collect them at the same time, but even under this new law, they can collect one type of benefit first and switch to the other later if it would result in a bigger benefit, and they can do it in either order. If you like, I can give you an example of who would benefit under either strategy.
Sure, let's do it.
Okay, I'll start with my sister-in-law. One of my brothers died much too soon, about 5 years ago, and when my sister-in-law turned 62 last year, she said, what should I do? Should I claim my survivor benefits or my retirement benefit? And I said, well, which one's bigger? Oh, my survivor benefit's much bigger. I said, all right, in that case, I know you're still working, but you're making a lot of money. She said, no, not really. I said, all right, go ahead, claim your Social Security benefit on your own record at 62, even though your retirement benefits will be permanently reduced, it will have no impact on your survivor benefit. And when you turn 66, you reach your full retirement age, you can then switch to the full survivor benefit, which is what my brother would have been entitled to when he died. Mm. Now, if she was in a situation where she was making a lot of money, let's say she was making $100,000, I'd give her completely different advice and say, don't collect anything before your full retirement age at 66, because if you do and continue to work and earn more than $15,720 this year, you're going to start giving benefits back. I would say if you made a lot of money, don't collect anything before your full retirement age. But at 66, that earnings restriction goes away. Go ahead, collect the full survivor benefits. But survivor benefits are frozen in time. They don't get any bigger than what my brother left her. But her own retirement benefit would keep growing by 8% a year up until age 70. And assuming that would be larger, she would switch to that benefit at 70.
I think this is obvious, folks, that Social Security is not simple. A lot of folks think, okay, I'm just going to take it because I'm worried about the solvency of Social Security. I'm worried about them changing rules on me down the road. So, Mary Beth, I want to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about some of that. I also want to talk about some of the likely changes that you see coming down the road, because it is a fact. I mean, the Social Security Administration says by the year 2033, if nothing changes, and I want to emphasize that point, if nothing changes, the trust fund will be exhausted. And only 79 cents of every dollar promised will be paid in the way of a benefit. So we're going to take a break. We'll come back with the contributing editor of Investment News, our friend Mary Beth Franklin. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. We have Mary Beth Franklin. She's been joining us. She is the contributing editor of Investment News. She was formerly with Kiplinger Personal Finance, and she's really become a truly well-known national speaker on retirement issues. And Mary Beth, from By the Numbers, our friend Mick Higley, he put some information out this week that said just 35% of active workers today are very or somewhat confident in that the future of Social Security will provide them retirement benefits at least equal to the retirement benefits that are being received by current retirees today, and for good reason. Right on the Social Security website, if you look at it, it says in the year 2033, that's only 17 years from now, I'll be 63 at that time. If nothing changes, and I want to emphasize that again, folks, if nothing changes, the trust fund will be exhausted and only 79 cents of every dollar promised will be paid. So, Mary Beth, there's good reason for people to be worried, but I wanted to again emphasize that point. If nothing changes, and Mary Beth, it's likely things are going to change.
Yes, it is, because Social Security is the most popular federal program in history, and more importantly, old people vote. And Congress will make sure that Social Security continues to pay its full benefits. And while it's a politically charged issue, mathematically, it's not that hard to fix.
No.
You can just take a handful of things. Now, in Washington, it's all about the art of compromise. So the Democrats generally hate any kind of budget benefit cuts, and the Republicans generally hate any kind of tax increases, which means we'll get a little of both. Frankly, if right now anyone who makes up to $118,500 in 2016 pays payroll taxes, FICA taxes, on that whole amount. And if you earn more than that, you don't pay taxes to finance Social Security. It stops at $118,500. Now, back in 1983, the last time there was a major Social Security reform, they had set a goal that 90% of all American wages would be covered and taxed to fund Social Security. Well, over the decades, we've created this real income inequality where we have a whole lot of people making a whole lot more than the $118,500 who are not paying taxes on that excess money. If we went back to the historical level of having 90% of American wages covered, instead of being taxed on the first $118,500, it would be closer to about $250,000. If that taxable wage base was allowed to drift up to that level, that solves about 75% of the long-term deficit problem. The other thing, we talk about full retirement age. David, you mentioned your full retirement age is 67 because you were born after 1960.
Mm-hmm.
My full retirement age is 66 because I was born in 1954. You already are experiencing a benefit cut compared to me because I can get my full retirement benefits at 66. I can choose to get them at 62. I take a 25% haircut. If you choose to take them at 62, you get a 30% haircut mm-hmm. because there's 5 years between early retirement and full retirement age. If I delay till 70, I get 4 years of delayed retirement credits. I get a 32% boost. If you wait till 70, you only get a 24% bonus because you only have 3 years to collect it. So right there, just by increasing the retirement age, it already is a benefit cut. And I think we're going to see yet another increase, possibly maybe till age 70. But we're talking today's four-year-olds might have to wait till 70. And frankly, they're going to live till 120. So probably not that big of a deal.
No. What other things are you seeing coming? I mean, people are worried about taxes being risen on Social Security. Right now, up to 85% of your Social Security benefits subject to tax. Could that possibly go to 100? And what about means testing? I had a client recently just decide to go ahead and take Social Security, not delay, because they were afraid with the presidential year that we may start getting means tested on Social Security or higher taxation. So he's like, well, heck, why don't I just go ahead and take it now and just and see what happens?
Well, you are correct that depending on your income, up to 85% of your Social Security benefits can be taxed at your regular income tax rate. But hey, already that's better than taking money out of your 401k or traditional IRA that's 100% taxable. So it does have still a bit of a tax advantage. The levels that trigger whether you pay taxes on your benefits are extremely low. They were set in 1983 and have not been indexed for inflation. There was a second tier that kicked in around 1990, but still they're very low levels. I think in some sort of future comprehensive tax reform, it would not be outrageous to think that up to 100% of Social Security benefits could be taxable, but I think they would pair that with a much higher threshold of, you know, when those benefits get taxed, and maybe they would index them to inflation, because without that indexing, more and more people have to pay taxes on more and more benefits each year. On the second point, would Social Security be means tested? In other words, I pay into the system all my life as a worker. I retire, I have, quote, too much money, however that's defined, I don't get a benefit. I don't think that will happen, and I hope it won't, because it would destroy the basic premise of Social Security benefits. When Franklin D. Roosevelt signed this into law in 1935, the idea was this was an earned benefit that workers paid for by having taxes earmarked on all their work that would fund a decent retirement benefit. If you say people who have paid in through all their lives don't deserve to get it, well, then Social Security becomes like welfare. And it would lose its political clout, because right now, almost everybody gets it, almost everybody supports it and fights for it. If it becomes viewed as a benefit for the elderly poor, it probably wouldn't have its role in politics that it does now.
Now, you wrote a piece recently, Mary Beth, on what the current presidential candidates are saying about this topic. So this is a little bit of a loaded question. What are they saying? I mean, right now, I think we're probably down to either Hillary or Trump or Cruz, more than likely. I don't see anyone else coming out of the woodwork, per se. What are these folks saying about this topic?
Well, Hillary and Bernie Sanders both want to expand Social Security benefits. In Mrs. Clinton's case, she wants to make sure that widows, even though widows inherit 100% of their late spouse's benefit as a survivor, at that point, their own benefit goes away. So even though they step up to a larger benefit from a household income standpoint, they lose money.
Right.
She would like to see widows and widowers protected better by Social Security. Bernie Sanders would like to see this wage base go up to at least $250,000, so more taxes are coming in to fund the system. Donald Trump hasn't said a whole lot of specifics on Social Security other than
Or much of anything else.
He says it's a bargain between the U.S. government and the American people, and the government's got to stand by its bargain. That would assume to mean that it would be fully funded and no benefit cuts. Ted Cruz, who is among the younger candidates, sees the need for benefit cuts in the future, but not for current beneficiaries. But the bottom line is, it's really not the president's decision. It requires an act of Congress, and usually something that is so controversial like this, they would probably punt and appoint a bipartisan commission like they did nearly 40 years ago, and let the commission come up with a solution and then vote it up or down. But certainly whoever is in the White House sets the tone for appointing a commission.
Folks, we're going to take another break. When we come back, we're going to have Mary Beth Franklin for just one more segment. We're going to switch gears a little bit and talk about Medicare. But as you talked earlier, Mary Beth, about President Franklin Roosevelt, I found this interesting. In August of 1935, he said, and I would reiterate this even today, we cannot insure 100% of the population against 100% of the hazards of life. We have tried to frame a law which will give people some measure of protection to the average citizen and to his family against a loss of job, against poverty-ridden old age. It basically was never meant to be the main source of income, but simply a cornerstone, a structure of which a more balanced position could be built. So even back then, I think I saw quotes from Roosevelt to Eisenhower to Reagan to Ford, all of them, and they pretty much all said the same thing. So we don't really expect that to change much. Hey, let's take a break. Like I said, have Mary Beth for about 8 more minutes. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Hey, don't forget, if you want the definitive guide to required minimum distributions for baby boomers, it's a 40-page guide that contains expertise, analysis, examples, charts, and explains key points and frequently asked questions when it comes to minimum distributions. Shoot me an email at cfci.us, and we'll get it out to you free of charge. We'll send you one, too, Mary Beth. It's from Ed Slot.
Okay,
it's from the Ed
great.
Slot Group. I know you love that stuff. Hey, well, let's talk about Medicare. I know your former colleague over at Kiplinger, Kim Langford, she writes a lot about this. I read a lot of her stuff. We talk a lot about Social Security, and we've explained the complexities of that. But when it comes to Medicare, once again, I think the perception is, hey, it's pretty easy. I turn 65, I get on Medicare, I get on B, I get a supplement, and just go off my merry way. But it's a little more complicated than that, isn't it?
It's much more complicated because people are now working beyond the traditional retirement age of 65. So even though the full retirement age for Social Security benefits is now 66, it's still age 65 to sign up for Medicare. And in most cases, you certainly want to do that because for a lot of people, it's a better deal than the health insurance they had at work. What people may not realize is Medicare A, which is the free part that covers hospitalization, is actually mandatory once you are 65 and start collecting Social Security benefits.
Mary Beth, one of the questions I get a lot is, do you automatically get signed up at 65, or do you have to go online and sign up if you're at 65?
It depends. If you are collecting Social Security benefits before your full retirement age, you will automatically be enrolled in Medicare A at age 65. And in most cases, they're going to enroll you in Medicare B, which is the outpatient health insurance coverage that costs money. And it has a monthly premium. Most people are paying about $122 a month right now. And that is deducted from your Social Security check.
Got it.
But if you turn 65 and you have not yet started Social Security, then it's up to you to go online and apply for your Medicare benefits.
What if you don't? What if you don't do it?
Well, if you are still working and have health insurance through your current employer, not a former employer, your actual current employer, or if you have health insurance through your spouse's current employer, you can delay signing up for Medicare Part B, the one that costs money, without a penalty. But if you don't have that coverage, considered credible coverage, and you delay signing up for Medicare Part B, there is a permanent 10% per year penalty for years that you were eligible to sign up and you didn't. So let's say you wait 5 years because you feel like, well, I don't want to pay $122 a month. And 5 years later, you sign up. Well, you've missed that by 5 years. So whatever the monthly premium is then, you're going to pay an additional 50% for the rest of your life every month because you waited too long to sign up for Medicare.
A little devil that was in the details of a client that retired last year, Mary Beth. It was the first of the year. They retired from United Technologies, received a severance package. Part of that severance package was health insurance for 6 months. He was 67 years old at the time when he retired. So he terminated employment and received health benefits. When he went to get on Part B 6 months later after he had terminated service, he received, and his wife received, by the way, the permanent penalty that you just talked about. And he had called Medicare and talked to them about this situation. And at the end of the day, they said, no, you actually terminated service back in the 6 months prior. So you are going to have to pay this penalty because you're 67 and a half. So
that's correct. There's a case where retiree health benefits from your former employer do not count as credible coverage.
So he should have signed up anyway and just paid it. He would have been better off for 6 months even though he didn't need it.
Exactly. Well, but the retiree health benefits do serve a purpose in that most people sign up for Medicare A, which is free, Medicare B, which costs money, mm-hmm. but has lots of deductibles and co-payments. So they get a supplemental medical insurance plan called Medigap that fills in the gaps in the co-payments. His retiree health benefit would effectively become his Medigap plan. He still needed to sign up for Medicare B, but that retiree health insurance would then fill the gap.
And that's why I appreciate you and people like Kim writing about this and being in my email box almost daily, because financial guys like me, that's not something that we've had to know before. And now that this wave of people turning 65 every day, I think it's reported that 10,000 going to move to 11,000. It's going to continue until like the year 2029. We're going to be turning 65. It's good that financial advisors like us know, and if we didn't have folks like you, Mary Beth, we would be continually in the dark on this. So,
I think it's critical because going forward, more and more clients are going to expect their financial advisor to have these answers. So if the advisor doesn't know it himself or herself, they should affiliate with some sort of expert that they can at least refer their clients to.
Mary Beth Franklin has been our guest. She is the contributing editor of Investment News, formerly with Kiplinger Personal Finance, national speaker, folks. She goes all over the place speaking to financial advisors and different groups on these topics. So to have you here. We appreciate that. And also, Mary Beth, I've been really thinking about this. You know, I finally wrote the book, Today's Guide to Retirement Planning. You and Ed Slott were so kind to put a nice quote on the back. But I got to thinking about how humbling that was for you and Ed to take the time to look at the material, to give a quote, because you guys have a brand to protect, and you have a reputation to protect, and you're not going to throw your name just on anything. And I got to thinking about this as we prepared for the show, and I just wanted to tell you thank you. Thank you very much for that.
Well, I am proud to do it because I think you are terrific and your clients are lucky to have you. If I could plug myself for a second.
Yeah, absolutely.
My newly updated and expanded How to Maximize Your Social Security ebook will be available probably by next week.
So where do they get that, Mary Beth?
They would go to www.investmentnews.com/MBF ebook. I'm sure you can put that on your website.
I will.
And it's written for both advisors and consumers in a very understandable way to talk about these claiming strategies, who can still use them, and what to do when you can't.
We'll have it on our Facebook page or Twitter page. I retweeted something you had out yesterday, so I'm trying to stay as tech savvy as possible. So, Mary Beth, thank you so much, and I'm sure we'll be talking again in 6 months.
Great, and enjoy California. I hope it's warm and dry.
Awesome, thank you. Folks,
bye-bye.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, questions of the week. You know, we've talked about Social Security a lot, so we'll start with this first one, the delay credit. So we mentioned after full retirement age, 8% per year. I had a real good question. Is that a compounded 8% or a simple 8%? Also, is there any reduction to my Social Security benefits in the United States if I'm also going to receive a pension from Canada? I did not know this answer. Had to go to our friend Mary Beth Franklin to get it. So we're going to come back, answer those questions and more. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Thanks again to Mary Beth Franklin. She is the best. Ed Slott will be on in a few weeks. I think it's the 1st of April, right before tax day. You know, Ed Slott, the country's IRA expert. He is a CPA, as he would call himself, a recovering CPA, but he still has a very active and vibrant tax practice out in the Manhattan area. But he'll be on, like I said, the first part of April. Again, if you'd like a copy of the Definitive Guide to Required Minimum Distributions for Baby Boomers, this 40-page plus guide contains expertise, analysis, examples, charts, explains a lot of key points, answers to frequently asked questions. Email us at cfci.us, cfci.us. We'll get you out a copy. It's just email, so we'll send it to you. But listen, we're going to be on spring break, so you email us and don't hear anything. Don't get mad. We'll be glad when we get back from spring break, we will get all of those out. So look for that. What is that? About the week of, I don't even know what week that is, 20th or something. So anyway, again, the Definitive Guide to Required Minimum Distributions. You want to make sure if you're turning 70 and a half or you're over 70 and a half or you're approaching 70 and a half, you have to take minimum distributions. This goes through all of the craziness that we have here in Bloomington. When you have folks that work for the school systems, IU, the hospital, you have people that work in the, you know, over at Cook or whatever, and they have IRAs, and, you know, what can you commingle, what can you not? Because if you mess this up, it's a 50% penalty. Yeah, 5-0. And it is real. I mean, I've seen people pay it. There's the talk about still working exceptions. Just, it's all in there. So as Ed Slott says, it's kind of like that old Prego sauce. And if you're old enough to remember this commercial, it's in there. So it's the Definitive Guide to Required Minimum Distributions for Baby Boomers. I think Jim may even remember that commercial. And he's just a baby. All right, here's a couple questions we have time for. Is the roll-up of the 8% of my Social Security benefits, the delay credits, post full retirement all the way to 70, is that compounded or simple? That's a good question. So if I have you know, a $100 bill and I'm looking at 8%, it's $8. So it's the way it works is it's $8 is added each and every year. So that's simple. If it was compounded, it would say, okay, now I have $108 and I get 8% more on top of that. So it's not just eight, it's more like nine. And then the next year it's like, you know, 118. So it just kind of rolls. That's compounded. It doesn't work that way. Whatever 8% of that full retirement benefit is, a full Social Security age, you just add that for the remaining 4 years. All right, another question. Good one. This came from a new client. Is there any reduction to my Social Security benefits in the U.S. if I'm going to also receive a pension from Canada? So I thought probably so, but I wasn't really sure. So I emailed Mary Beth Franklin, and she gave me an answer within about 30 minutes. And she says to me, yes, David, the Canadian pension is treated just like an American government pension, where the pension did not pay any FICA taxes. So Social Security benefits for workers are reduced by the windfall elimination provision, and Social Security spousal and survivor benefits are also reduced and sometimes even eliminated by the government pension offset rule. U.S. and Canada has a reciprocal treaty that allows someone who worked in both U.S. and Canada but did not get enough U.S. Social Security credits under either system, they can combine them together and get those. So then she talked about how she was leaving for San Francisco. And anyway, I guess the weather was really bad out there. So the answer to that question was yes. All right, another question. And actually, I knew this one, so I didn't have to ask Mary Beth. My railroad pension for my ex-husband is about $300 a month. My Social Security is $1,700, but they say I'll only get $1,500 because of me receiving a pension from the railroad. They wanted me to call the railroad and ask if Social Security was taken out of my husband's pay. Won't they know if it was and the amount they should hold back is correct? Well, yeah, they would know. I mean, almost all railroad pensions didn't pay Social Security, so two-thirds of the railroad pension is $200. That's going to offset against your Social Security. So, unfortunately, it sounds correct. All right, let me check the time. We've got another question here. Let's see. I like this one. I'm leaving the NPERF system. That's the Indiana retirement system. They're probably a teacher or someone that works for the county government. They say I'm 58 years old. They've been working there for 17 years. They wanted to know what their options were. Well, the way it works, if you're 58, you can't really retire with benefits because you have to meet at least the age 60 plus 15 years of service to get full retirement. So what I would do is if you can't, you probably should continue to work for another couple of years, but I would wait until you're 60 and then you can claim a full benefit. Or you can take a reduced benefit, but you don't want to do that. The rule of 85 is what a lot of people follow, and that's the years of service plus your age. If that equals 85, you can also retire out. So that's how the MPERF system works. But, you know, if you have questions about that, I would really encourage you to get a hold of us. We've been working with Monroe County Schools, Franklin Schools, NewPAL, I mean, RBB, Monroe County Government, and Ryan and Wayne are fabulous at this. If you're a IU policeman, we've had three of them in the past 3 weeks working through their benefit package. And I basically call Ryan in and said, hey, he's the guy that knows. He sits down. They do the applications online. I mean, it was really, really something, the way that they navigate through this. And we had someone that's in this week that said, I was going to try to do this myself, but watching you guys do this, I'm so glad I didn't. You know, just picking the pension options, you know, the life with survivor or no survivor, what to do with your annuity savings account, roll it in, roll it out, keep it in, what to do with your 403B, what about your pay that you're going to get from your sick days, you know, how can you defer that into a 403B or 457 plan? You know, this guy's head was spinning, but we try to keep it simple, like we always do, but I'm just telling you that if you're one of these people, get a hold of us. We'll get you in touch with Ryan or Wayne at our office, and they are fabulous when it comes to the Indiana retirement system for sure. And you can email us again at cfci.us. And again, ask for that guide to retirement distributions for baby boomers. It's really, really good. The group at EdSlot, the group I'm part of, put this together for us members to be able to distribute it free of charge to anyone and everyone out there. So again, emails, we'll get it out to you. All right, let's see if I have any more I can get to here real quick. Okay, what items pass through my will and what items do not? All right, so let me just real quick go through this, and I got to take a break. Anything that's in your name individually, so I own something just in my name, my wife's name's not on it, no one else's name's on it, that goes through your will. Anything else, like a joint account with rights of survivorship like my wife and I have, if I die, it goes to her, it doesn't go through the will. Now it's an individual account of hers, and it would go through her will. Anything that I have assigned a beneficiary to, so something on my IRAs, my life insurance, annuities, that goes directly to the person. Direct transfer does not go through the will. You can also put designations such as transfer on death or pay on death on items that will transfer directly to a beneficiary. And you can do that pretty much on pretty much everything in Indiana, real estate, cars. I mean, just about anything and everything can have a TOD, transfer on death designation, or pay on death if it's at the bank. So the real answer is, short answer, anything in your name individually would pass through your will. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to wrap up the show and talk about what's happening next week. This is Your Money with David Hayes. All right, everyone. Great show today. Appreciate you hanging out with us. Replay Saturday morning, then spring break week. pretty much ghost town in Bloomington, Indiana. Pretty much my office is completely gone. We have one advisor hanging back. We have a couple staffers, but we'll be a little short-staffed, I think everyone is. So, again, if you email us, cfci.us, and you ask for the definitive guide to required minimum distributions for baby boomers, it probably will be a little bit of time before we're able to get that out to you, just because no one will be checking that email. Hey, you know, I was thinking about this week. I actually had a really good laugh. My wife, she drug up a bunch of old scrapbooks trying to clean out a room, and had a big scrapbook of old football stuff. You know, I was a high school football player, played a year over at Greenville College. I ran the wishbone. If you don't know what that is, it's kind of a ride and decide offense. And, you know, and it's been kind of brought up that maybe I was pretty good. So I think I've believed that over the years. And I was thinking about how to tie this into the investment stuff. You know, people have asked, how have your accounts done, or how's this done? And people, oh, yeah, they've done great, you know, or whatever, yeah. And they back-test things. I love back-testing, you know, back-testing. Now, this has been back-tested for 30 years, and it never lost any money. Well, if I back-tested that I always held the ball correctly, always made the right read, always had the right people in the backfield and the line correct, then my back-tested numbers will look really, really good. So here's what happened. I have convinced myself that I was a really good football player in high school. I convinced myself. And the older you get, the better you were. No question about it. Ask any of my buddies. So I had convinced myself that I had thrown for 1,000 yards and rushed for 1,000 yards my senior year at Edgewood High School, 1987. So my wife will tell you, years ago, my high school coach retired, and he called and said, hey, would you like some of these tapes from your high school season? I mean, yeah, it'd be great. I was like 30 years old, and I get these tapes. I go home. I stick them in. I was so excited. Couldn't wait to watch them. Was watching Edgewood versus Bloomington South, and it was Mo Moriarty's very first year at South. And my wife describes it great. I'm sitting there looking at the screen, all excited, but just after a few plays, my face sort of droops down. My eyes kind of squint. She said, what's wrong? I said, you know what? I remember being a lot better than that. And that kind of remember, but then I have to get this in. So I go through the stats, and I look through Edgewood's stats, and I had 49.6% passing. I threw seven passes for touchdowns. I threw six interceptions. I only had 786 yards passing and 580 yards rushing. Folks, I got better as time went on. The numbers don't lie. So when someone says, yeah, I've done pretty good, or I back-tested this, get the real numbers out and take a look. Hope you've enjoyed the show. Any of you old athletes will enjoy that story greatly. Have a great week, everyone. We'll talk to you again in a few weeks after spring break's over. Goodbye.
This program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.